Discourse on The End of the Revolution and the Beginning of Independence by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 3, Social Upheaval, August 27th through August 30th. Worcester, Massachusetts, August 27th, 1774. The 52 dissenters from the Worcester, as a result of a town meeting with Whigs in charge, were instructed to recant their Redmond dissent. Most of the 52 gathered at Mary Stern's Tavern on August 22nd and professed their willingness to recant. They were told that they must prepare a formal declaration that would be printed in the Boston papers. The instructions for the declaration included a provision that the signers would declare that the people of Worcester were not acting as a mob. 47 of those signed the declaration, which sought forgiveness from the people of Worcester. The town meeting then directed the clerk to obliterate the record, recorded Redmond dissent. The clerk complied and drew lines and squiggles through the recorded dissent, completely obliterating it from the record. The Patriots of Worcester still did not deal with three mandamus counselors, Timothy Ruggles, Timothy Payne, and John Murray. On Friday, August 26, riders fanned out from Worcester to alert the surrounding towns of the impending action. In Leicester, Spencer, Brookfield, Rutland, Westboro, Shrewsbury, Grafton, Sutton, Oxford, and other areas, farmers mustered quickly and prepared to travel to Worcester. Although Worcester town contained less than 350 adult males, a crowd estimated at between 1,500 to 3,000 gathered on the Worcester Commons on the morning of August 27th. The crowd selected a committee of five to meet with Timothy Payne. Payne's resignation read as follows, quote, "Gentlemen, as you have waited upon me as a committee chosen by a large body of people now assembled on the Common at Worcester, desiring that I now resign my seat on the council board, my appointment was without solicitation, and I am very sorry I accepted, and thereby given any uneasiness to the people of the county, from whom I have received so many favors, and take this opportunity to thank them, and I do hereby assure you that I will not take a seat on the board unless it is agreeable to the charter of this province." The gathered crowd, not fully satisfied with the resignation, required that Payne remove his hat and walk amongst the crowd, formed in two lines, reading the resignation over and over so that all had the opportunity to hear it from his own mouth. Payne, apparently impressed by the showing, wrote to General Gage. He concluded his letter with the following, quote, "Thus, sir, you see, an open opposition has taken place to the acts of the British Parliament. I dread the consequence of enforcing them by military power. People's spirits are so raised, they seem determined to risk their lives and everything dear to them in opposition and prevent any person from executing any commission he may receive under the present administration. They give out that Brigadier Ruggles shall not sit as a judge in our county court and that the court shall not be held here." Close quote. Rumor had it that General Gage had contemplated sending troops to assure that the courts opened on September 6th. If true, it is possible that Payne's letter discouraged his action, fearing that shots would be fired. Next, about 500 men who had visited Payne went to the home of Thomas Murray in Rutland, 15 miles away. About 1,000 more joined them as they traveled. Finding that Murray was not home, they pierced his portrait with a bayonet and left. They then prepared a letter which was published in the Boston papers on September 5th. It read, "To John Murray, Esquire, Sir, you have proved yourself to be an open enemy of this province by your conduct in general and in particular in accepting of the late appointment as an unconstitutional counselor. In consequence whereof, a large number of men from several towns are assembled who are fully determined to prevent you holding said office as counselor at the risk of our lives and fortunes, and not finding you at home, think proper to propose to your serious consideration the following, viz., that you make an immediate resignation of your office as a counselor. Your compliance as above, published in each of the Boston newsprints by the 10th day of September next, will save the people of this county the trouble of waiting on you immediately afterwards. In the name and behalf of the whole assembly now present, and was signed Willard Moore. Murray refused to sign, however. He never did return to Redmond. Brigadier Timothy Ruggles likewise never returned home. Faneuil Hall, Boston, August 26th and 27th, 1774. Worcester County had asked that all of the countryside committees meet with the Boston Committee to discuss what action should be taken if General Gage sent troops to open the courts on September 6. Realization that one county could not stand against the British troops required that the counties and Boston should all work together to stand against the Massachusetts Government Act. On the 26th, a committee was appointed to discuss what measures are necessary to be taken respecting our novel and unconstitutional courts of justice. The final report of that committee was the beginning of a cooperative agreement to organize against the royal impositions. It read in part, "No power on earth hath a right without the consent of this province to alter the minutest title of its charter." It asserted that the citizens of Massachusetts were entitled to life, liberty, and the means of sustenance by the grace of heaven and without the king's leave. It asked to all the counties to oppose the openings of the court. It called for the convening of the provincial congress. Finally, it called for the people to learn the military art according to the Norfolk plan as necessary means to secure their liberties against the design of the enemies, whether foreign or domestic. A confederation of counties had agreed to support each other and to resist, by whatever means necessary, the imposition of the Massachusetts Government Act. Roxbury, Massachusetts, August 29, 1774. In the words of Joshua Loring, in a letter to General Gage dated August 30, 1774, quote, "At 12 o'clock on the night of the 29th instant, I was awakened by a very hard knocking at my door. Immediately I jumped out of bed and threw up the window when I saw 5 men disguised, their faces blacked, hats flapped, with cutlasses in their hands. I asked them who they were. They answered they came from a mob. I then asked them what they wanted. They told me they came to know if I would resign my seat at the board. I answered I would not, and went into some discourse with them, asking what right they had to make such a demand on me or any other man. They told me that they did not come to talk, they came to act, and that they wanted my answer. I replied that they had already got it. Then they told me that they would give me till tomorrow night to consider of it, and then the speaker gave orders to a large party who were in the road to discharge their pieces, which they accordingly did, and which I took to be pistols. They then told me my house should be safe till tomorrow night, and went off in number about 60. The next night, being the 30th, I thought it prudent to leave my house, and my son went out to receive the mob. He informed me as follows, that in the evening, about 8:30, his mother came home much affrighted, and told him that at or near Liberty Tree in Roxbury, she saw about 50 men assembled, who immediately, on knowing the carriage, began to huzza screams and whistles, and called out to the coachman to stop. But he continued on, and they followed the carriage in this manner for near a mile, and were then close at hand. About 9:00 he heard their noise, and in a few minutes they were up to the house, and immediately knocked at the door. He went to it and found 5 men disguised, their faces blacked and cutlasses in their hands. They ordered the candle to be put out, and then asked for the commodore, Joshua Loring. They said they came for his answer. He told them he was gone to Boston, and then endeavored to reason with them against their demand, but to no purpose. They said this was the second time they had come, and to beware of the third, that if he would publish in the Thursday's newspaper, a recant, it would be well. If not, he must abide by the consequences, which would be very severe, that his house would be leveled to the ground, and many other of the like threats. And then these five, who seem to have direction, I cannot say command, of the mob, who were at the gate, retired to them, and during all this time they kept laying on the board fence with clubs and crying out, "Don't fire, for God's sake, don't fire, keep back, keep back." But the people did not seem to mind them, and continuing their hollowing and knocking on the fence with their clubs, all of which was designed to intimidate. They soon went off, and as he was informed, to the house of Mr. Pepperall, who not being home, they returned again with the space of half an hour, and in the same tumultuous manner halted in the road opposite the house, and all at once were very silent, occasioned, as he was informed, by some friends speaking to them. A few minutes after, they set up their hollowing and etc. again, and went off. And as it was very dark night, he could not judge of their number, but was told there were about 200. End quote. Plymouth, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. On August 28, 1774, George Watson, Mandeman's counselor for Plymouth, Massachusetts, went to church as usual. The Boston Evening Post reported what happened. When he came into the house of public worship, a great number of the principal inhabitants of that town left the meeting house immediately upon his entering it, being determined not to worship and fellowship with one who was sworn to support the changes of our Constitution, which professedly established despotism among us. On August 30th, George Washington sent his resignation to General Gage, to wit, "By my accepting all of this appointment, I find that I have rendered myself very obnoxious, not only to the inhabitants of this place, but also to those of the neighboring towns. On my business as a merchant, I depend for the support of myself and my family, and of this I must be entirely deprived. In short, I am reduced to an alternative of resigning my seat at the council board, or quitting this, the place of my nativity, which will be attended with the most fatal consequences to myself and my family. Necessity, therefore, obliges me to ask permission of Your Excellency to resign my seat at the board, and I trust that when Your Excellency considers my situation, I shall not be censured." Boston, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. Thomas Hutchinson, Jr., son of the late governor of Massachusetts, also resigned, to wit, "It would be exceedingly inconvenient for me to change the place of my residence or submit to any kind of restraint upon my person, being the only one of Governor Hutchinson's family now in the country, and having the care of his affairs here, as well as those of the late Lieutenant Governor Oliver, both of which I apprehend will suffer greatly by my being under any personal restraint. I am sensible these reasons are of a private nature, but as they relate to the concerns of others more than my own, I hope Your Excellency will find them sufficient to induce you to accept my resignation of my trust as one of His Majesty's counsel for this province." By the end of August, the Mandeville's counselors commanded no authority outside of Boston. Next would come the opening of the courts. The governor and commander-in-chief, General Thomas Gage, had promised to send troops to protect the courts in Worcester. The patriots had vowed that the courts would never sit under the authority of the Massachusetts Government Act. Who would give in? This ends episode 3.